Chris, I got contacted by a CNO this week.
Uh-oh. That sounds either really good or really ominous.
So not a CNO that you might be thinking.
Not a chief nursing officer?
Not a chief nursing officer.
Oh.
This was somebody looking for me to submit people's names for potential awards. This was a chief nominations officer.
Oh, I've never heard that before.
I mean, we're literally just making stuff up now. You can't just be a chief because it's like a thing that could possibly be done. Like, I don't understand. Like, so you have like a chief meeting officer.
Or a chief LinkedIn post officer.
Chief events officer. Chief 5K fun run officer.
Chief janitorial officer.
I just feel like we've just really gotten to a place where...
Everything's a chief.
Yeah. If everybody's a chief, nobody's a chief, I guess.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to Touchpoint. Welcome to episode number 357. Chris Boyer, Reed Smith, here as always.
I am the chief podcast host officer today.
Yeah. I'm the chief announcement officer. So before we get to the show, just a couple of quick plugs here. Touchpoint.health is the website. And the reason I bring that up is because there's something called the TPS report. So if you go there, check it out. Name, email, address, get you in one email Monday mornings to start your week. 5 articles, hopefully a little value add for you, the listener. Little call out. You will notice in the TPS report something of a survey. There's a button up at the top. If you will click on that, answer a few questions, that helps us with our end of year. And one, you know, let us know how we're doing, a little bit of feedback, what you like, that kind of thing. But also as we think about our awards, and I always love doing the award show, you know, stuff like that. So we need some votes in there. We've gotten a good start. I think you've probably seen, whether it's Chris or myself, post about it on LinkedIn, and we'll continue to do that. But you'll have a quick link there as well. So if you'll sign up for the TPS report.
We'd love for your input. I mean, we do this podcast for our audience, for you all. So love to hear what you like, what you don't like. There's a funny question that pits Reed against myself. So that'll be fun to do. And, you know, all of these lead up to culmination of that award show, which I'm destined to call it the Potty Awards, Reed. The annual Touchpoint Potty Awards.
There you go. I guess we did. I guess we are calling it that.
P-O-D-D-Y, that is.
Yeah. Well, we would. We would appreciate you taking the survey. If you will, go to the website, sign up for the TPS report, or track us down on LinkedIn. You can look at one of our most recent posts, I'm thinking, and you can find a link to the survey. We would certainly appreciate that. So we'll pause here. Again, touchpoint.health is the website, and then we'll be back with today's show. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. Reed, this week I attended the Healthcare Internet Conference, recorded a live episode. That was last week's episode of our Touchpoint podcast. I always love going to conferences where, you know, there's a lot of conversation around technology. Obviously, you know, all the buzzwords and the terminology that we talk about here was showing up in all of the different sessions there. But one thing that I kept noticing is that regardless of the technology, regardless of all the digital experiences that people were talking about or sharing their best practices, there was always an element of offline that supported the online. And I know you and I have touched on this topic before, but today would be a really good one for us to kind of get into this integration of offline and online experiences in the context of patient experience.
You know, we talk a lot about noise. As you think about email, for example, just in your personal life, that's a noisy channel for probably a lot of folks. Text messaging may be getting that way for some. But what's interesting is these things kind of ebb and flow. You think about direct mail is a good one. Some years ago, it was like, man, look at all the junk mail. Nobody looks at this stuff. They just throw it in the trash, et cetera. Well, then as email has gotten busier, it's kind of opened back up the opportunity for direct mail to be purposeful again, right? So again, I think it's not just a one size fits all. I mean, you got to kind of understand, you know, what you're trying to accomplish, and we'll get into some of that today.
So we have a couple of things that we're going to talk about, and then we have a really great interview a little bit later. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Let's first start off, Reed, talking about a concept, a new term that we can add. It's not a three-letter acronym, but a new term that we can add to our lexicon, so to speak. Hybrid CX.
All right.
Integrating offline and online experiences. And this comes from an article from CMS Wire. We've referred to them before, this website. It's a good article, though, about hybrid CX. Let's jump in a little bit to talk about what that actually means.
You know, they talk in here about as this relates to the consumer experience or CX. That's where the CX comes from, obviously, that it now encompasses both the physical and the digital environments almost interchangeably, right? So many brands online and offline CX strategies operate in silos, they say. So again, as the consumer may, you know, think of it all as one thing, a lot of the businesses do not, and that's leading to kind of a fragmented, you know, customer journey or experience.
Yeah, but if you think about it, right, this whole concept of this consistent, unified, as they call it, hybrid CX, it requires a lot of stuff at your organization. Integrating online and offline cohesively, data engagement strategies, there's a lot of things that kind of build into this. And that's why sometimes it's very difficult for organizations to embrace that. Let's kind of go through, there's three points here, or a couple points here, that they outlined for the hybrid customer experience. And what that actually could kind of look like when we, if you realize it the right way. And the first is around delivering consistent convenience, personalization, and value across all of the channels where customers interact with your brand. And that's like your website, your app, your email, the call center, the in-person locations, and all of that, right? Consistent, convenient personalization and value across all of these different touch points.
Yeah, a key word there for me is consistent. Second thing they call out, strategically connects data and insights between digital and physical interactions. It's kind of interesting. Eliminating silos and aligning those channels into one continual experience, really to meet the consumer wherever they happen to be.
Right, with the right context and purpose, right? Knowing where the call center fits into the overall experience, the overall journey, that sort of thing. I think the ultimate goal here is to integrate offline and online channels into a holistic ecosystem. That sounds like a manager bingo word right there, a holistic ecosystem.
Yeah.
Built around the customer's needs and preferences. And in fact, there was a guy, we referred to this company before, Telium, Ted Svikas, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name right, who's the Senior Director of Digital Strategy at Telium, actually said that the experience that started on a mobile app is now expected to be carried over into a physical storefront and then followed up with an entirely different medium like a phone call or a text message. That is what the modern journey is today.
And they go on to talk about the fact that, and I think most people would agree with this statement, but the lines between online and offline are probably not getting blurry. I mean, they are blurry. They talk in here about the fact that consumers today spend as much time online as they do in, you know, a brick and mortar location. And then they go into some examples here of how, you know, those lines are really kind of starting to bleed together. So we'll go through a few of these.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, these examples are in a retail setting. A lot of them are retail focused, right? So what we'll do is we'll share an example of what's happening in retail, and then we'll contextualize it for what's going on in our space in healthcare. We know it's a little different, but we also know that consumers' expectations in retail are coming into healthcare. That's the whole concept around consumerism. So the first one is BOPIS, Reed.
Oh.
Buy online, pick up in the store. I'm sure you've seen this in a retail space, right?
I thought that was one of those animatronic things that, like, Chuck E. Cheese.
Or a BOPIS? Or is it that toy where you turn something and you hit something?
Oh, right. Yeah. It's either that or one of those where, like, you got the mallet and the little things pop up out of the hole. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, this is about, like, buying online, picking up in the store. The kind of that you start the journey online and you end up in the physical location. And in healthcare, that could be similar to the online appointment scheduling journey. You schedule appointments online, or you even pay for things online, and then you go to the physical location. And like prescriptions is another one, right, Reed? Where you can order your prescriptions online ahead of time. All of these things are kind of like this concept of starting a journey in one medium and ending it in another medium, digital to physical.
Another example in kind of the AR, VR space is the idea of virtually trying on something. I did this with Best Buy some years ago when we moved here to Nashville and wanted a new TV for our den. You could use the Best Buy app and it would, like, show you the TV, and you could, like, kind of hold it up and you would see, like, you know, how it would fit on the wall. And, you know, I was trying to decide what size to get, what would look right, you know, so you can kind of, you know, try it on, if you will, before buying it. You know, in healthcare, it's an interesting one. I think, you know, you can potentially see certainly things in the DME space, prosthetics or otherwise, glasses. You see it with Warby Parker now, where you can quote unquote try on glasses and see how they look and that kind of thing. But I'm wondering too about experiences. You know, you think about, like, touring a NICU or R&D space, or, hey, I've got to go in and have an MRI. I've never had one before. I kind of think I might get claustrophobic. You know, what should I expect? You know, like, that's where my mind goes with some of the AR, VR technology.
That's a really good use case. Another thing that they talk about is geofencing offers. Retail apps trigger offers for personalized messages when customers are detected near their physical locations. Have you had that happen where you walk into a Starbucks and suddenly get a message in the Starbucks app, right? That sort of thing. Well, I think hospitals can do something like this. We have to be very careful, right? We want to ensure that we're being safe and secure with the patient data. We don't want them to think that we're creepy. But you could have apps that trigger offers or personalized messages, either when they're near a physical facility, like, you know, maybe a discount on the flu shot at your pharmacy. Mm-hmm. That could be a good one. Or a reminder to schedule preventative care as you're leaving an appointment. But it could be even more of, like, geofencing virtually, where you can actually understand what they need next and actually make a recommendation. Now that you scheduled your appointment for a primary care physical, you may also want to get a heart screening, or you may want to think about, you know, have you gotten your colonoscopy yet? There could be some things that you could do that are tracked not just by geofencing, but by, you know, conditional triggers.
Kind of going down that same theme, they're talking here about beacon technologies. And so sensors across stores or maybe physical environments that understand or track the journey the customer or the consumer is making kind of through the physical space, right? By engaging with apps and digital profiles in real time. And so you got to be somewhat careful here, but, and I don't mean this the way I'm going to say it, but, you know, kind of setting the privacy thing to the side, you know, just looking at, well, what would be interesting, you know, tracking people's journeys through the healthcare system would really help, you know, understand, you know, how things are going, you know, how the check-in process was, how long they lasted, when to prompt them from different offers based on where they are in the facility. If it's getting close to lunchtime, you know, you could notify them, you know, where to get something to eat, or where, you know, there's just different ways. If you knew physically where people are and married that up with where they are in their care journey, there's all kinds of, you know, kind of interesting things we can do.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting application, right? Another one is, you know, ordering something online to pick up in the store for fulfillment. Or, you know, in a healthcare setting, it's like not only your pharmacies, as we talked about before, right? Or even the gift shop. You can order something at the gift shop and have it delivered to the room. That's a good
exit. Exit through the gift shop.
Exit through the gift shop. There you go. But another one that I was thinking about here, I was I had an appointment with my endocrinologist. She prescribed something new to me. And as I'm leaving the office, I got a message through my app that says that prescription is available for pickup in the pharmacy on the way out the door. And so that's a very convenient way to do that. I mean, I did mention that it was my pharmacy where I'll pick it up. But that way, it just directed me right to the pharmacy and I was able to pick it up. So that's a really good application of this like click and collect concept, right?
I like that. And then we've kind of hinted and touched on this a little bit, just the idea of mobile apps and store guides. And so we've talked about wayfinding in healthcare quite a bit. We're notorious as we organizations have built on and gotten bigger and remodeled and things like that of constantly telling people that, you know, well, that's a different second floor, you know, and like you can't get there from here and some of that kind of stuff. The in hospital navigation certainly is a big thing, especially to move between the hospital and MOBs and things like that.
So these are a couple of examples of things that are happening in other spaces that are representative of this hybrid CX concept. But you and I both know that by doing this in an organization, even in retail organizations, inconsistency is the biggest issue here, right? And it could impact the customer's view of you and actually cause mistrust in your brand if you do it wrong. If your website and your social media pages don't align to what the experience in store is or in person, it could cause disconnects and it could erode your brand value. Another thing they call out here, prices listed online don't match what you're charged in physical checkout lines. Well, think about that for price transparency. You post your prices as a health system, you better make sure that that's what they're getting billed, because that would set away, you know, that would erode the confidence in the experience they have and even make them think you're a little bit of a bait and switch if you think about it.
And that's pretty common, I would guess. Unfortunately, right.
We understand this concept of hybrid CX. Why don't we do this, Reid? Let's take a break and then we'll come back after a brief pause and we'll talk a little bit about customer experience in the age of, it's been 15 minutes, we could say it now, AI. In the age of AI, Reid, we're going to talk about how this all works with artificial intelligence right after this pause.
Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
All right, Chris. So we talked a lot in the first half of the show about the physical and digital environment and some of the ways that they're seeing that play out across retail specifically, kind of what that means for healthcare. But really, what does that mean now in the age of AI? Our friends over at Forbes, an article called Customer Experience in the Age of AI.
They kick it off right away by saying, Reid, most brands don't personalize customer experiences at the scale or depth necessary to compete with the world's leading companies. That's it. Don't need to read any more of the article, I guess, right?
Thanks for coming. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
You know, they said that personalizing end-to-end customer experiences requires orchestration across all channels, a capability that no brand has fully mastered. But the merging of customers' physical and digital experiences may be the only way smaller companies can compete against digital natives like Amazon and Google. That's kind of their angle of this article here.
So it's hard pressed to just scroll through LinkedIn and not just be bombarded with articles that have the word or the letters AI in the title. And I think that that kind of drives towards this point of it's hard to think about the world now without AI in it. In turn, hard to then think about experience because that's just where we find ourselves, I guess. I don't know. It'll be really fascinating to see, Chris, over the coming, really even the next 12 months of practically what does this mean in people's daily lives.
And there are many, many more tools that are coming out there that promise they can comprehensively manage this end-to-end personalization. You and I both know that's not, there's no one silver bullet that's going to solve this problem. Boy, if you and I solved that problem, if we knew of a technology company that did that, they would be millionaires, billionaires in our space.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But creating a 360-degree view of a customer is going to help if we start to implement automation, AI, and other tools to deliver recommendations. This whole concept of like, you know, next best action and recommendations and propensity modeling. It's only going to work for us to be able to apply that and moreover, apply it in an online and offline sort of way.
You had talked about the 360 view of the customer. They talk in here about it being solved with automation, quote unquote, AI-powered intelligence and, you know, activation tools for, you know, delivering these AI recommendations. It's just harder, I think, as we think about delivering patient care and AI-driven recommendations. Like, some of that runs counter to me a little bit, but I understand that's where we're going too, right? So it's like, you know, there's a trust level there, I guess, that people still have to figure out, like, how much are they okay with?
Right. And we're not like Amazon or Google, where we could understand our customer as much as we can all the way through. I mean, Amazon probably has all of us mapped to a particular type of persona, and they know us from start to finish, like our the entire experience. This article is kind of putting forward that the best approach for smaller, non-high-tech brands is to develop a data and tech roadmap with granular requirements tied to specific use cases. So don't boil the ocean here. They give an example. A company will need to figure out which customer data elements will be used in real time to power recommendations on their website or their app or whatever it might be. Or it must determine what systems have to talk together after an appointment is made to suggest relevant add-on services. Then it has to bring together the business and tech teams to work iteratively, focusing on bringing that out as the value in the overall customer experience.
Well, okay, here's an interesting part of this article that I think, you know, I loved kind of your thoughts here, but it talks in here about the fact that the most successful digital transformations of the past decade kind of follow this 70-20-10 rule. So 70% of the effort is around changing the organization. So the process, the way of thinking, you know, KPIs, incentives, you know, it's kind of the people and process part, I guess, right? 20% entails, they say, getting the data right, which we could dive into what that means exactly, but the data integrity piece, data hygiene, I guess. And then the remaining 10% is about the technology foundation. Now, I would argue that most people probably are spending 70, it's probably the inverse, where 70% of the effort is around the technology foundation.
Right.
Or maybe that's just the way I feel. I don't know if that's real or not.
I think it depends on the organization, right? There's some organizations that are not willing to change, so you have to do a lot more change management. I like this concept of the 70-20-10. It's kind of good when you're talking to a CIO or someone like yourself, Reid, where you could say, you know, most transformations have the 70-20-10 split. Do you think we're going to face that doing it here at your organization? Mm. Or is it? Mm-hmm. I still think, though, that the people, moving people, getting people aligned is probably the most important thing and does take more time and effort.
That's probably fair.
But so let's break down. The article kind of highlights four different things that can impede good digital transformation, particularly when you're looking at your customer experience. So let's go through those, Reid.
Yeah. First one they talk about here is that companies, and maybe this is a little bit what I was kind of driving towards, maybe a little bit, or feeling, I guess, is that companies are still set up to be product first, not customer first. I've talked a lot about us here at Ardent specifically moving away from service lines and brick and mortar locations and being about the consumer. It's pretty easy to say that.
Right.
It's harder to then execute against it. They say in here that the increasingly popular role of the chief customer officer was created to solve this problem, you know, to help orchestrate people and the parts and all the touch points and things like that. So I guess that's me, huh?
That's you. That's your job. But the fact that your organization is really set up to be product, or in this case, service line first, moving it to that customer first is a big shift, right, in the way you're thinking about things. Another thing that can impede good transformation down this path is analytics not being infused throughout the business, or no way to kind of aggregate all of the data into a customer data environment. And I know that's something, Reed, that you're facing, you're having to solve for, because you need to have that environment.
Yeah, you have to, because otherwise, I mean, how do you know? How do you know that you're actually making a meaningful impact? So this is kind of an interesting one that they call out, that content is created manually and not tagged for reuse.
Typically, right? It's not in all cases, but I don't know. I think that's true. Think about your websites, Reed.
Mm-hmm.
It's all manual, right?
Yeah, for the most part.
I mean, when they talk about reuse, we've done podcasts about this before, Reed, about like structuring your data and using it so that you can empower it through automation. Well, right now, most of the content in our organizations is still created manually. Lastly, it's the way we work. Even if Agile is common in IT departments, when you're getting into a cross-functional team, you have to start working Agile. And that's a process. That's a whole different way of doing things. Without tools to facilitate rapid experimentation and learning throughout the product development or the service development, oftentimes organizations end up with inconsistent experiences across all their channels. So not only do you have to change the mindset to become less product first and more customer first, and you have to bring in analytics to help being able to measure what your success is, and developing content in a way that you can repurpose throughout all of this. The fourth thing says you have to work differently. You have to be more agile. And that's all of those things are not native to us as organizations.
I mean, that's what they go on to say, right? Is that companies should look at some of these self-governing pods of workers. Pods is an interesting word there, I think. But anyway, you know, how do you pull together folks from marketing, operations, IT, you know, clinical operations, the physician organization, whatever it is, and really try to have, you know, them aligned around a common set of goals and, you know, decisions and things like that.
Yeah, the article even said something really interesting. This is not just an exercise in journey mapping or technology planning. This is about developing the front-end flow to the customer and the back-end fuel to drive intelligent experiences.
I'd rather just do the journey mapping. Can we just stop there? You know, like, here's the map. Found it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The article ends, too, with some ways about if you're starting to go down this path. So let's wrap up with that, kind of make it seem less despondent, right? And let's try to get some positive ways to do this.
Well, they talk about first, you know, by asking what experiences do you want to revolutionize and how can you ultimately build some sort of an engine to achieve those goals? Again, super easy to just recite, if you will, much harder to put into action. But ultimately, once you've decided on these answers, they talk in here about, you know, to first research a few CRM records, if you will, to determine whether or not you've captured all the data you need to actually power those experiences. That is kind of an interesting call out, right? It's like, what experiences do you want to revolutionize? And then taking that one step further, I guess, is figuring out, are you actually capturing the information to understand that?
That's the only way you're going to know if you made the experience better, because you could use the data to track that. If you have a gap, you won't. You know, and then you also want to track to see, is it seamlessly gathered across all potential channels in that customer journey? That's where the article, again, Debbie Downer article ends with a statement. Reed, why don't you go ahead and read it?
Well, that the answer to both of these questions is probably no.
This author of this article in Forbes, they certainly had a certain angle to this and saying we're not there yet. But I think it's a good, worthwhile exercise for us to kind of go down that path, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a huge opportunity to continue to flesh all of these things out. I think, and it calls it out a few times through this article maybe, but you know, just we can't just stop with like, well, once you know, then you stop, right? It's, you know, how do you then move this into action towards some measurable results?
You know, and as you go down this path, you're going to notice that there are a lot of touch points that are important to the customer journey that may not even be front forward. Like it may not be a channel that the customers actually talk to directly, but it still empowers your customer journey in a significant way. And I think that's a nice transition, Reed. I sat down recently with Ian Lindsay from Cerecore. Cerecore is a company that works with IT departments, and they help do placement, third-party placement of people to help man call centers and help do, you know, operation support, etc. It was interesting to talk to them because they really are very much back end of the house. But Ian was describing how customer first is in everything that they do and the people that they hire to manage these call centers and help desks and stuff like that. He even shared in this interview how he works with them through training and other ways to ensure they're aligned with supporting the customer experience. Because one of the examples he gives, right, is that that person may be on a call with a doctor who is patients right in front of the patient, but that doctor is having trouble accessing the patient portal. So you have to always consider that whatever you're doing is you're one step away from directly managing or impacting the customer experience. It was a great interview. So we're going to take a break. We're going to go to it. And then you and I will be back to close out the show.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome back to the Ask the Expert segment of the podcast, and I'm excited today to have someone new on the show, although I have talked to you a couple of times before, Ian, and I'm excited about today's topic, and that's Ian Lindsay. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have our conversation today, but before we dive in, I always like to let our guest share a little bit about themselves, their background, and where they're from. Since you're new to the show, this will be great for our audience to hear a little bit about that. Do you mind sharing a brief background of yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Got into the industry, industry meaning IT, more years ago than I want to admit, but let's say 12, just to put it out there. Before that, I was working as an EMT. So I kind of have the healthcare heritage that Cerecore was looking for. But I got into the field of IT support and briefly was in healthcare for about 2 years. Before moving into broadcast, actually, I was working over at Disney ESPN, and I worked most of my career there before COVID hit. It was a difficult time for that industry, especially with the parks being closed and stuff. So I started looking for more work, moved to Nashville during the pandemic. Cerecore poached me. I think I updated my LinkedIn status to say I was in the Nashville area, and the recruiters were reaching out that week to get me on board here. So I came to Cerecore about 2 years ago. It's been an interesting ride.
Tell us a little bit about Cerecore.
Cerecore is a subsidiary of HCA, wholly owned, and they provide managed service support operations to healthcare across the country. So we have clients anywhere from, you know, folks that want level one support, folks that want clinical application support, folks that want networking support, things like that, hosting. We do a whole number of services, and I'm sure I'm leaving some out, but we provide an onshore support. A lot of healthcare obviously wants to cut costs, but we provide more than just what most managed service operations provide. It's that extra touch. You know, we have a lot of people that came from healthcare. We have a lot of folks that worked in the industry and then got into IT support. And it's kind of that extra level that we want to provide for our clients. So it's been a really good fit for me coming from managed services in a different industry to see how it is here. There were some shocks in healthcare. I'm not going to lie. My impression of healthcare IT support is that it would be, you know, 20 years advanced in the future. And coming in and seeing the way things are set up was a bit of a shock for me. But no, it's been really good to kind of see how this industry functions and take my talents and add them into the pool of our already talented folks.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think your experience both in healthcare and also outside of healthcare give you a unique perspective in particularly around today's conversation, because you're right. I think we all have our own opinions of how IT support is in healthcare. Many of the audience members listening here work in a health system, and you know, they kind of see the IT support as being a particular type of support, but there's a different aspect to this. And I think it hinges upon this growing focus around better engagement with patients, with stakeholders, and even patient care, right? When we think about it, we hear a lot of the adage that we are all patient focused, right? We all are focused on patient experience. We're all focused on employee experience when we work within health systems. And I think that that is something that is pervasive across all different parts of the industry, particularly in the work that you do. So tell me a little bit about your focus on that. I'm particularly interested because I know that, you know, many years ago, people were talking about Disney and you know, and other outside industries as having a much higher focus around this.
Well, I think one thing to, you know, keep in mind is that we need to provide support to the patients or customers, whatever, you know, you call them, to the outside folks. And that is real time in person. By in person, I mean talking to an actual person. So many industries, you know, are outsourcing that to some sort of automated process, right? How many times have you tried to reach out to customer support at various industries and you get sent to an email, you know, that's telling you how to do something on your own? You can't speak to a person. You can't even find a number to call anymore for half these places. So one of the things we do is provide patient portal support to a lot of our clients. They call in, they will get our actual analysts. The same analysts that are providing support to doctors and nurses are picking up these calls with the patients. I think it's important for two reasons. One, obviously the patient needs to get some help. You know, whether that person's just trying to sign in to check an appointment that they have or a test result or whatever. But I think it's important too for our analysts to stay in touch with that patient care, right? They are one step away from the patient at any given time, and it keeps that in perspective. So they're not just dealing with the staff at these healthcare organizations. They're dealing with the actual patients. They're involved in patient care. And if they care about what they're doing, they get that. We get the buy-in from our analysts, and it provides better support to everyone.
Right. And I think that that's a really important piece, right? Is that even in my work in healthcare, working on the digital technology aspects of it, I always would associate myself as being once removed from patient care, yet still important and critical towards patient care. And that's something that's really, really a new advancement or a new concept, relatively new concept, I will say, in healthcare. We're moving away from just being operational support to being now focused on how do we improve what we do from an experience perspective. Now, I know you work with a lot of organizations in this capacity. How are you seeing organizations looking at that, addressing that? How is that becoming important to the way they look at IT staffing?
When it comes to actually, you know, hiring folks, there's kind of the trifecta in IT, right? You have folks that are really good at customer service. You have folks that are really good technically minded, and then you're really good clinically minded for IT, for healthcare, I should say. And it's hard to hit all three of those, right? But I think we're seeing a trend towards a lot more customer service focus. You can make up a lot of things, a lot of track space if you have good customer service. And if you focus on that first, I think the clinical knowledge and the technical knowledge comes, for most folks that are coming into this industry. Not that we're not prioritizing, you know, technical experience or clinical experience, you know, healthcare backgrounds, things like that. But I think more and more organizations are looking for really high customer service. You know, I was just talking with the CIO of one of our customers, you know, last month, and her biggest concern is that her IT department internal isn't giving enough customer service to their employees and their patients. And, you know, she wanted to stress that's why she wants us involved.
When you look at that, right, you talked about this trifecta of characteristics that you're looking for: people with clinical mindset, people with a technical mindset, but also people with that service mindset. I always look at the service aspect as like a softer skill set. And that's a little bit more difficult to train people on, so to speak.
It's very hard to train people on, I got to be honest. I would rather teach people technical skills, and I would rather teach clinical skills or clinical background, you know, all day. Customer service, I use a lot of my experience from, I stole a lot of my folks when I was at Disney from Apple. And so I use a lot of customer service that they, you know, piggybacking on that, the three A's of customer service, and things like that is acknowledging, align, and assure the person on the other end that you're going to solve their issue. But you can say that all day long. It's very difficult to put that into practice the first time. It doesn't feel natural. You know, when you're on the phone with somebody and they're upset, you know, it doesn't feel natural to just say to them like, oh, well, I understand we're going to fix this issue, right? To go into that, you know, some people it's natural for. And those are natural customer service folks. But other industries teach this a lot more. And I think we're taking that and we're adapting our training, you know, including things like that. Even a couple of years ago, I think that there was less focus on the customer service aspect of it. And it was more, okay, learn these processes, learn these applications, learn these clinical things, learn how a hospital works. You know, you're going to be supporting it. You have to learn how it's working on the other end. And those things are all important too. And you can't just be a robot spitting back out. We don't want somebody on the phone asking like, is this an AI that I'm talking to, or is this a person? You know, and that's what we need to concentrate on.
Yeah. But you know, when you think about that though, there is this huge drive in organizations, not just health systems, but organizations, of embracing sort of more of these automated solutions, right, that are out there from a cost containment perspective. I think it's really hard sometimes to show the value of customer service and why you need to have real people there. How do you see that? How do you, when you work with your clients, how do you talk to them about that, about showing the value of what customer service can bring?
I think you bring it back to that patient experience. And that's what we try to do with our analysts. We try to always tell our analysts, you are one step away from patient care, right? As I said, and the same thing goes to the patient experience. What is their experience from the time that they get admitted to the hospital to, you know, a year later when they're following up on care? What is their experience? And, you know, I always tell my analysts, if they ever have a question of whether they're doing the right thing, err on the side of helping whoever you're on the phone with, right? Err on the side of the patient experience. I'd rather slap you on the wrist later for not following a process to a T than, you know, having a bad patient experience and advocate for them. Right. And that's what they're calling you for. At the end of the day, if you're getting a call from that patient, they need something, whether that's signing into an account on an iPad or checking a test result and then understanding, you know, some of it's the empathy for our analysts is understanding that that person might be yelling at them because that test result might tell them if they have cancer or not. Right? That test result might be telling them how long they have to spend with their grandkids or their kids. And so it's not just about that phone call. It's about so much more than that.
Yeah. And conversely, if you're like supporting a physician having trouble logging in to their systems, they may be, you know, one right there with the patient or managing a patient care situation where it's the same kind of empathy. They're frustrated because they're trying to, working at the top of their license, right? And yet, digital is everywhere, yet this technology is everywhere. It's so critical to have these, you know, these human interventions or these human service people to support throughout all of this, because we've built a very complicated system.
Absolutely. And I mean, they don't teach these types of systems in medical school, at least that I'm aware of, right? So,
right.
You know, yeah. The problem there is, you know, you're talking to doctors or you're talking to nurses that have an incredibly high amount of information floating around their head at any given time. And yet this is probably the one thing that they're not an expert on all day. The only thing that they don't know more than almost everyone else they talk to is IT. And they have to call somebody and say, hey, I need help, right? Which is also difficult too. So you got to keep in mind that aspect of it as well.
There's this desire, this expectation of individuals, be they patients, providers, what have you, to be literate and be able to be self-supportive in their environments. Yet, you know, we're introducing every day more and more technology, more and more things that are kind of becoming, you know, it could become sort of a perfect storm of frustration if not handled right.
I agree. I mean, I think that folks do expect some of that, right? We are being taught more and more that self-service style of fix it yourself mentality. You know, you call in and you might get an automated voice system when you're calling your bank, or you're calling because your flight got canceled, or right, whatever you have in different industries. And I think people bring that into healthcare. And I think to some extent, at least patients maybe expect that. But internally, and even patients when they're calling in, they want the option if they get stuck for help. And that's really what it comes down to, is they might want to go through the automated process. They might want to try and fix it themselves. But if they can't, or if they're one of the folks who say no, you know, they're one of the folks that don't have, they refuse to go in the automated checkout line, right? When they're at the store, there's going to be a certain percentage of people that are not going to want to use that. And we still need to support them, and we still need to get them to where they need to go or what they need to do.
With our desire to be more self-supportive, but also there's always this concept of we need to have people there to help intervene when there is an issue or a situation. It's true with like telehealth solutions. It's true with digital health solutions, whatever it might be. You know, having a person there behind it is very, very critical. AI is not taking over everything yet, right? I don't think we'll ever be in a world where that's like. So I know we often like to look in healthcare outside of the industry, outside of our industry, for best practices. You know, I mentioned earlier Disney, right? Disney is one that we kind of elevated to say they have the best customer experience, right? But where do you see like best practices being applied? Is it Apple? Is it Disney? Where are some good examples of the type of people that will serve that role as a customer service agent?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit biased. You know, obviously coming from Disney ESPN, I think that I saw a lot of their customer service and I saw that evolve over time. So I learned some things there, right? I like what they did and what I was able to do when I was there, you know, building out an in-person support. And we stole that kind of from Apple, right? We built out like an in-person support bar in the cafeteria, you know, similar to a Genius bar. And that was great. You know, there was huge buy-in. But does that work in a hospital system? You know, no, right? You can't have a centralized location. So how do you translate that? How do you get that same type of white glove support? And how do you implement it into a healthcare system? And I think it comes down to the customer service. You can provide white glove support on a phone call. Or you could provide bare minimum support. Okay, yep, here's how you reset your password. Have a great day. You know, and the difference between those two is when that person walks away from that phone call or when they hang up, how do they feel? You know, did they have a good experience? And that's what I mean by, you know, that customer experience. It's the nurse, it's the doctor, it's the admin, it's HR if they're calling in, and it's the patient. And how do you provide the best experience across all of those? That is what we need to take, or what we are taking from other industries and implementing. And I think that by focusing on that customer service, like I said, the three A's, it's a great de-escalation, you know, method for when you have that person that's frustrated. But how do you prevent the call from getting frustrated? You know, how do you read that? You know, how do you stop it? What I often do with our analysts, I'll listen to a phone call and I'll go back and say, okay, do you know where it went wrong? Can you pinpoint the exact moment where it went wrong? you know, and we'll go back and look at that. Okay, this is where the person, you know, started getting annoyed or started getting frustrated because they needed access to that system.
I also think as we're talking about this, the CIOs that you work with, they used to measure the success of a service desk by certain KPIs, right? How many calls they can manage, how many tickets they can close, that sort of thing. I would imagine that success metrics are a lot different in this day and age with service desks. Is that fair, or do you see that?
I mean, those things are still measured, right? We still look at how fast we can get to the calls. We still look at how many calls we can take in a time period, those things. You know, I like to say in this industry, we measure everything. You know, when I'm interviewing folks and they ask, oh, okay, how am I going to be measured? Basically everything you're doing, right, is going to be added up. But we do a lot of customer service surveys. When we send those out, I think we put a lot more into those than maybe companies I've worked at in the past. You know, a lot of times customer surveys are looked at, okay, they're good, they're not good. Well, what we like to do, every single negative survey that we get, we have a manager follow up and call that person. One, to make sure that their issue actually got resolved, right? Because a lot of the times when I submit a negative survey, it's because something didn't happen the way I thought it was going to. So one, we have the manager follow up to make sure that they got whatever help they were looking for. But then two, we want to talk to that person. You know, they might give us one sentence, two sentences. We want a whole conversation. What went wrong from their perspective? How can we improve? Also to talk to that person to let them know that we don't accept, you know, that kind of experience as the norm. And we want to assure them that it's not going to happen again.
Right. And what you're describing, it reminds me a lot of just in general how experience measurements across health systems are changing, right? It's no longer just, you know, a survey of like, you know, how do we rate 1 to 6, blah, blah, blah. It's the context and being able to understand and finding those negative points and finding those as opportunities and bringing that forward. I think this kind of represents sort of a shift in dynamics of how we're measuring success in general across our organizations. We've been almost 20 minutes into this conversation now, and I have to say, I only once alluded to like kind of self-service AI enabled solutions, but I do want to drill in on that because I see you know, a lot of use cases around automating through chatbots and other AI-enabled solutions in service desks. How do you see this, you know, working in conjunction with this whole concept that we're talking around, about this new mentality around, you know, the new service desk agent?
I got to be honest, Chris, I'm probably going to nerd out here a little bit. I love this stuff. I'm absolutely fascinated by it. You know, had the ChatGPT account as soon as it was publicly available. I love playing around with the image generators lately. There's some really crazy things you can do on there. But I do want to, you know, kind of make a separation between AI and automation. Because a lot of times I'm getting asked right now, especially from outside the industry, but even in the industry, there's a lot of confusion on what's AI versus what's automation. And I think there's a lot of people combining those things. Automation, we're already doing, right? Automation is things like companies implementing their own self-service password reset options. That's an automated tool. You can log in, you can, you know, put in your account name, something like that. It sends you an email. You can reset your password yourself. That's automation. AI, and specifically generative AI that we're seeing a lot more of in the industry, is not involved in healthcare right now. You know, I was just talking, we had the CTO of HCA come and speak to us about this last week. And he has the greatest job in the world because he gets to play around with this stuff all day. Or so he says. But it's the challenge is there with AI and generative AI is that it's only as good as the data you're feeding it. And healthcare organizations are just not chomping at the bit to sign up and hand over all of their internal data to the cloud, to Google, to you know, Amazon, to, you know, whoever they're building this out, OpenAI for ChatGPT, et cetera. And without being trained on the internal data, AI is not that great, right? I mean, you can go in, you saw it with ChatGPT when it first came out. If you asked it a question for current events, it could not answer because it didn't have that information. It only was trained up to like 2 years ago. You can build out some incredible tools with this stuff, but we're still in a governance phase. You know, we're still in, hospitals are trying to figure out what's the best way. You know, can we feed this data and then get our own closed box AI generative, and then it can answer questions based off our organization? Is that something we want to open ourselves up on and the risk? I think the stuff's incredible. I just, a lot of those things are further away than I think we know. Now, as far as some light AI, there's some tools out there that we're using that are really, really exciting. One of the things we're designing currently is we're working with a tool called Amazon Connect. We're working to set up and switch over our entire voice system over to Amazon Connect. And one of the things that it does is it has some HIPAA-compliant AI that can verify someone's identity by their voice. Now, this requires a tie-in into systems. It requires buy-in from the organizations. But if we can verify somebody by their voice in a HIPAA-compliant manner, now you can call in, and within 10 seconds of you talking, the tool can identify who you are. And you can say, I need to reset my password. And it verified your identity. It can reset your password. You can go about your day without talking to somebody. But is that the best experience? You know, that's what we're trying to weigh out.
Right. You always have to weigh the technology, because the technology moves much faster than sometimes our expectations, and which basically inform our view of the experience. And I think that that's one thing that we always have to kind of keep in check in health systems. But so, Ian, as you look forward then, are you saying like 4 or 5 years down the road, there's still going to be customer service agents or representatives on the phone? They may be AI enabled, they may be technology automation enabled, but there still will be people. People are not going to lose their jobs, right?
I would say absolutely. One of the things we're building into our system is kind of a, you know, break glass in case of emergency. So, you know, the system can detect if somebody's upset on the phone. So if, you know, you're speaking to an automated voice response and you're saying, hey, you know, this isn't helping me or something, it will detect that you have a negative sentiment and kick you to a live analyst immediately. And it's one of the things we tested pretty vigorously before we even considered putting this in the environment and playing around with it. But I like the, I saw online, you know, I was reading a couple articles on AI because I'm a nerd, and, you know, by all accounts, I don't think anyone's going to be replaced by AI, but they're probably going to be replaced by people that are using AI. So it's going to be AI enhanced. There's been funny memes and things like that, but it's, you know, you're not going to be replaced by AI. You're going to be replaced by somebody who knows how to use AI. Because even generative AI needs somebody prompting it to do what it needs to do.
You're almost like saying there's a fourth A that needs to come into play in the future.
Well, I think it's coming.
I don't mind you being nerdy, by the way. This is what our show is all about, is being nerdy. So I appreciate your perspective. And we won't hold you to that. We're not going to come back to you in 3 years and say, hey, you know what, Ian, you were wrong. But I think it's interesting as we think about this, right? Because I'm of the same mindset, right? That AI and other automation-enabled tools are there. That's what the whole technology is to help us. It's not to replace us, right? And, you know, people were saying the same things about, you know, the internet when it first came around. We have to go through the hype cycle, but we'll get there at the end. So Ian, as you look over, you know, our conversation, which I think has been really good, are there any other things that, you know, you're seeing as trends or that health systems are starting to kind of consider as they look at enabling this patient first, consumer first service mentality?
I think a trend we're seeing with most of our organizations, as they're looking, they're balancing all these things, right? They're trying to cut costs. They're, you know, CFOs are more involved than ever in IT since COVID. And they're looking at ways to cut costs while improving patient experience. And they still need to get all these things done in their organization. They need to upgrade systems. They need to get rid of legacy systems. They need to modernize what they're doing. I think we're seeing a shift to a lot of our organizations are trying to lean on us more. You know, hey, what can Cerecor do for us that you're not doing? And it's that shift left mentality. We're talking about AI. Well, what can AI take over the low hanging fruit. And then our analysts can do a more meaningful work. They can do the higher hanging fruit. Well, the same thing is going on in these organizations. They're saying, what can Cerecor do for us? And then what can we do for our organization? You know, it's not about replacing the folks in the organization with Cerecor. It's about freeing them up so that they can do the projects, they can do the upgrades, they can concentrate on those things. We're even seeing it with their clinical service desks. They're leaning on Cerecor. Hey, can you take clinical service desk support from us? Kind of like a 1.5, maybe 1.75 level of support. And then our analysts that are trained in clinical, you know, whatever EHR they're using, they can focus on builds. They can focus on upgrades. They can focus on the system that they're not getting to because they're bogged down in the day-to-day, you know, support of that system.
This has been a really insightful conversation, Ian. I really appreciate kind of your mentality, your background, your all your different perspectives. And I think people listening in are going to learn a lot from this conversation. You know, as we wrap up here, many people, they may want to carry on connecting with you online and carrying on the conversation. What are some good ways for them to do that?
Best way is to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm on there quite a bit. Cerecor is on there as well. So you can connect and get to, you know, at least follow us and see kind of what we're doing. We're, you know, Cerecor itself will be at Chime, we'll be at Hims, Becker's, you know, all the places you would expect to see us. We're actually really involved with ServiceNow as well, because we're a ServiceNow partner. So any of the ServiceNow roadshows you can see, if you have developers, we'd love to meet up. Our developers obviously integrate into a lot of systems with ServiceNow. And so, you know, they're pretty big in that space. I think that's one of the best ways.
Well, you know, we'll definitely link to your LinkedIn, to your website, which has all the information about those different events. I think, you know, highly recommended for people that are want to carry on the conversation more, reach out, find them at a conference, or, you know, just reach out to Ian directly online. Ian, thanks so much for your time today and sharing your insights. It's been a really great conversation.
Thanks, Chris. A pleasure to be here.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Special thanks to Ian for coming on the show. Certainly appreciate all the insights and feedback. This is an interesting topic. Offline, online, physical, digital. Great topic. I'm sure we'll revisit quite a bit. Again, quick plug for the TPS report and subsequently the end of year survey. So again, touchpoint.health is the website. Go sign up for the TPS report there. Track us down on LinkedIn. You can find a link to the survey there as well. We certainly appreciate the feedback, rate, review, subscribe, all that kind of fun stuff that all the kids say. Before we get out of here, a couple of recommendations. What do you got today, Chris?
Reed, I'm going to recommend a nightlight. A nightlight that we use, obviously, in my little son's room. The Hatch Rest Baby Sound Machine. It's a nightlight. It also has the ability to be a sleep trainer. It has an alarm clock built in, a white noise machine in it. It could even play music. So imagine this. It looks like a Google Home device or an Amazon Echo device. There's a sleeve that's on top of it that's translucent. And you could choose different colors to come through your nightlight. And they're all soft colors that don't disrupt your sleep. It could be red. It could be blue. It could be green, what have you. You could actually use it to gently wake people up in the morning. So we have it come on in the morning. It starts very dimly, a dim yellow, and then slowly the intensity of the light increases when it's time to wake up. And then when it's officially time to wake up, it converts over to green. What we're doing is we're kind of visually teaching our son that this is about the time to get up, right? And conversely, you could do it at night too, right? It goes from a light yellow, dimmer, dimmer, dimmer to a red, and then eventually it turns off. It's all controlled by an app, which is pretty cool. You can use this app to go in and set different things up. as I mentioned to you, it also has the sound machine built into it. So you can have a gentle white noise if you need to help to sleep. And it's all controlled from your app. It's really kind of handy, highly recommended for parents with kids. But I'm going to tell you something. I think I might get one for our bedroom ourselves, because I'd rather be woken up that way than like this crazy loud alarm that happens right now. You know, so anyway, it's the Hatch Rest Baby Sound Machine. There's different versions available. There's a Gen 1 and a Gen 2. They're not cheap, right? They're about, you know, I would say about, you know, about $50 to $60. Right now, the Gen 2 is at $89 on Amazon, but we got it on sale at one point in time. But there's a lot of different things. And Hatch is an interesting home health device that's really going after this market for parents. So they have a number of other things too, including, you know, changing pads and scales and all this other stuff. But in this particular case, I'm just talking about the sound machine nightlight. So that's my recommendation.
Very nice. Very nice. I am actually going to recommend a TV show, Bosch. So Bosch was a series that was on, I believe, Prime for some years, and it's run its course. I can't remember how many seasons it had. Five or six, something like that. A series of books by Michael Conley, a detective character of his that they've now made into a series called Bosch. Well, since that ended, there is now Bosch Legacy, which is a kind of spinoff, if you will, of the Bosch series. And anyway, season two of that just came out towards the end of October with the release of the first four episodes. And so the remaining episodes are released weekly, two at a time. So it's been renewed for a season three. So a lot of good response. So if you like the kind of FBI detective, suspenseful, you know, based in LA, you know, type content, I think I've recommended Bosch and maybe even Bosch Legacy before. But anyway, it's good. It's a lot of fun. And again, if you like those types of books, like the John Grisham novels and the Michael Conley novels, etc., it's you know, kind of a police procedural series, if you will.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, I haven't started the Bosch series, but you keep talking about it, and I know it's a commitment, right? You have to roll up your sleeves to do it because there's a lot of episodes, but it definitely is one that's going to get on the list to watch.
Yeah, it's good, and too, it's kind of fun. The scenery's neat. It's a neat one to get into, so that's my recommendation. So, well, folks, again, we're getting towards the end of the year, which means we'll start having some kind of fun shows. Again, touchpoint.health, sign up for the TPS report, fill out the survey. That will help in that effort. Obviously, we'd love to hear from you. Rate, review, subscribe, track us down on LinkedIn, whatever works for you. Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.